Chapter 13. The first thing I did while in hyperspace was visit the bathroom to wash off my hand and take a quick shower to sluice away the filth of Deenan's tunnels. It was a public service as much as a personal wish to be clean, because I still reeked even after shedding the filth-encrusted layer of clothes outside the sewer. I took some strong antibacterials as a precaution. My cuts would scab over and heal soon enough, but they'd probably sting for a while. Scoured, bandaged, and finally presentable, I rejoined Nakari in the cockpit with a few minutes to spare before entering the Exidine system. She smiled as she took in my fresh clothes and damp hair.
"Bet that feels better," she said.
"Unbelievably so."
"I'll do the same after the next jump."
"Intercom still on?" I asked as I strapped into the pilot's seat. "Can Drusel hear me?"
"I hear you," Drusel's voice said.
"Great. I wanted to ask you why the Empire and Alliance are so interested in you specifically as a cryptographer. What sets you apart from the others?"
"What interests the Alliance is that I have written some slicing programs that will easily cut through low-level routine Imperial encryption, which I will hand over as soon as I'm reunited with my family. I can also slice through some of the higher-level codes once applied with sufficient time."
"Begging your pardon, but how do we know that exactly?"
"Did not the Capoans assure you of my capabilities?"
"They assured the decision-makers in the Alliance, and they believed the Capoans well enough to send us to get you. But it's a fact that the Alliance has yet to see any proof that you can do all that you claim. It isn't that I doubt you, it's just that I prefer to confirm your abilities."
"What would you suggest?"
The stars snapped into focus as we exited hyperspace into the Exidine system. Our scanners immediately detected the presence of several Imperial ships, including a heavy cruiser and a Star Destroyer. Their images were a few minutes old, owing to the speed of light, and they wouldn't see us for a few minutes yet. "Calculate the jump for Nanthri, R2, I said, and after he chirped acknowledgement, I added to Drusel, "Perhaps you can pick up some Imperial communication here and decrypt it for us while we wait."
"If it's low-level communication, certainly. If you will scan the system for some of their communications while I set up my hardware, we will see what can be accomplished."
"Your hardware is in that sack you brought with you?"
"Yes. A datapad I assembled myself with associated couplers for interfacing with most alien data ports. It is unique."
A note of unmistakable pride crept into the Gibbon's voice, which still sounded as if it were being muffled by a mouthful of something chewy. Nakari's right hand shot forward and switched off the intercom. Her eyebrows tracked upward on her face as she waggled her head, muttering,
"Well, aren't we special?"
I laughed. "We really should find something for her as a test. It'd be good to know we're not getting conned here." Nakari's fingers slipped a couple more switches and turned a knob. After a few seconds of white noise, a stream of unintelligible symbols filled the cockpit, and she re-established the intercom link with the starboard living quarters so that Drusel could hear it.
"Ah, just a moment,"
Drusel said.
"Calibrating. Feed established. Decryption running."
The babble paused for perhaps 30 seconds before starting up again in a short burst, most likely a standard receipt of the prior transmission. Drusel's voice spoke into the silence.
"Success! The Empire has transmitted orders through their holonet originating from Deenan. We missed the beginning of the transmission, so I must begin reading in mid-sentence. Small custom ship, inbound from Deenan, search for two humans, one given, one droid, highest priority. Report sighting immediately to ISB. Bounty offered for capture. Do not destroy." And then what follows is simply an acknowledgement.
"Thanks, Drusel," Nakari said. "Please hold a moment."
She flicked off the intercom so that she could talk to me privately. You know she could have just made that up, right? Yeah, I know. That's going to be difficult to test. We would have to keep going toward the planet, let the Imperials spot us, and then see if they chase us.
We'd get away easily, Nakari pointed out. But then they would have a sighting to report, and a good idea of where we're headed. Right now, they've broadcast that everywhere, and don't have any idea where to concentrate their forces. If we give them a clue, we could run into a whole lot of trouble ahead. Is it worth it to stick around here just to confirm that she can decrypt standard orders?
No, I don't think so.
They're going to know we were here soon, because we can't conceal the reflected light of our entry. But if we leave now, we can prevent them from getting a deep scan and confirming three life forms aboard. Assuming that her decryption is true, and they're looking for us. And note that if it is true, the Empire knows about your specific involvement after you got out of the sewer. They've definitely seen security footage from somewhere.
Agreed. I don't like the idea of sticking around anywhere until we drop her off at Omarith. I'm curious to know if she's for real, but it's really not our job to determine if she's telling the truth or not. We're just a lightly armed taxi service now. Nakari winced.
Can we call it a heavily armed taxi service? I like the sound of that better.
I shrugged. Sure.
No argument, huh? That's nice.
She turned the intercom back on. R2, can we jump? I asked. Let's go if you're ready.
Jumping,
came the reply. And once we were safely in hyperspace, Nakari unbuckled and rose from her seat, imitating her father as she headed aft.
Pilot, refreshment is in order. Fly responsibly in my absence.
She trailed a finger along my shoulder as she passed by, and I couldn't suppress the grin her touch inspired. I liked her, and was starting to think maybe she liked me back. Nothing I could do about it now, however. Flirting on a mission is one of the best ways to ensure mission failure, and most likely romantic failure. I'd seen Han Solo get in trouble too many times while he was trying to charm Leia to doubt it, and he hadn't exactly won her good graces yet. We had 5 planets to skip over before we got to Nanthri, and decided which way to go from there. We could swing to the Galactic North, which had the benefit of being a shorter transit route to Omarith, but the drawback of more Imperial worlds. Or dart south for a short distance and then east again, traversing Hutt space and avoiding the Empire, while risking who knew what in the seedy side of the galaxy. One thing was more likely near Hutt space. Bounty hunters. If the Empire had rebroadcast that message about a bounty on our heads on unencrypted channels, we'd have all sorts of beings on the lookout for us who didn't need to abide by Imperial protocols and procedures. They also didn't need to do all the other things Empire forces needed to do. Patrol vast areas of space and guard against the Alliance, police smugglers, and so on. Bounty hunters could devote 100% of their attention to finding us. Thinking about that made me nervous. But I'd rather face a single bounty hunter's ship than the heavy firepower the Imperial fleet could bring to bear. Turning south was probably a better decision. R2, when we get to Nanthri, begin calculating a jump that will take us through Hutt space. If you can do a jump all the way across it without stopping, that would probably be best. The droid's agreement showed up on my holoscreen as Drusel's voice came through the intercom.
Would you like my assistance in calculating these jumps? It should not be terribly taxing. Indeed, I would find it refreshing.
I searched for a diplomatic way to say no. If by some awful chance Drusel was in truth an Imperial spy, and this was all an elaborate sting, then the coordinates she fed us might lead directly to an Imperial fleet position. And I wasn't sure I wanted to trust the ship's navigation to calculations done in someone's head anyway. What if she forgot to carry the one or something like that? Thanks, Drusel, but R2's already wired in and familiar with the ship's specs, so I'd like to have him take lead. Perhaps you could check his work, though? I winced, hoping she would not take my reply as a slight on her abilities.
That would be fine,
she said, and then a silence settled over the cockpit. Presumably both R2 and Drusel were lost in pure math and had nothing more to say. With Nakari gone for a while, I had nothing to do except remain in the pilot's seat in case something went wrong. It was an ideal opportunity to meditate and see if I could strengthen my bond with the Force. When I'd first felt the Force on the Millennium Falcon, it had been the barest tickle of a presence in my consciousness and in the air around me that wasn't attributable to my five senses. Since then, I had reached out to the Force on numerous occasions, and each time it grew marginally easier to make that contact and feel the Force swirl and coalesce around me. A not quite tangible but very real sensation. Sort of like exercising and discovering over time that the same routine requires less effort because your strength and endurance have increased. I didn't have any goal in mind other than increasing my awareness of the Force. There were no vegetables or other objects to nudge around in the cockpit anyway, and I figured a greater grasp of the Force would help me perform such tasks more quickly later on, and perhaps allow me to move larger objects or accomplish any number of other Jedi exercises. The streaming starlines of hyperspace were excellent for clearing my mind. No distractions, just visual white noise. I remembered training with the remote, wearing a helmet with the blast shield down, and feeling the Force as a power within and without that worked with me and yet was not me. That had been a twinge, a tiny awakening of a new part of my mind, like a half-glimpsed dawn through sleep-encrusted eyes. I knew I wasn't fully awake yet. I think part of me wanted to go back to sleep. But the dawn comes, whether you sleep through it or not. And I think the Force might be like that. Always there, but unseen until you make the effort. My breathing slowed and deepened, and soon I became aware that there were others breathing on the ship. Drusel was nearest, sitting in an attitude of prayer, or perhaps meditation, like myself, attempting to soothe away her worries. Perhaps the activity of her mind was pure math. Farther back and to the left, Nakari felt happy, though I didn't know about what. Her breath was uneven and sort of purred. Was she humming to herself? I couldn't hear to confirm it, of course, but I felt through the Force that it must be true. And what about beyond the ship? There was nothing else breathing nearby, that's for sure. But I knew the Force could tell me of things beyond my immediate surroundings. Ben had shown me that. When the Death Star destroyed Alderaan, he had felt it, even in hyperspace, when we were still light years away. I wondered if I could sense anything outside hyperspace. I opened myself more. Or perhaps I should say that I lost myself more. Let go of my five senses and focused only on what the Force could show me. Nanthri waited ahead, and around it, some kind of danger? Anger? No, nothing so personal. More like antagonism, aggression. But I couldn't see who was feeling such things, or against whom they were directed. R2's warning bleep was a sharp tug on my hearing that broke my trance. I blinked and saw his words stream in the holofeed.
1 minute to arrival in Nanthri system.
Nakari returned and took her seat as I acknowledged R2. I remembered feeling through the Force that she had been happy and humming about something. And now I tried to confirm visually that she was in a good mood. She had pulled her curly hair back into a ponytail, and I admired what that did for her profile. The line of her neck. And, uh-oh, she caught me. When my eyes came back to her face, one eyebrow and a corner of her mouth were quirked up, as if to ask, "What are you looking at?" That sent me into a brief panic. If I admitted I thought she was beautiful, that would be flirting. Badly. But if I said nothing, I'd look slow-witted. I cleared my throat and said, I wonder if the Jedi had any secret tricks to keep them from feeling awkward. Amused, she asked, didn't Ben Kenobi have anything to say on the subject? Well, he kept telling me to trust my feelings, and I trust that I feel awkward right now. Sorry about, you know, staring. Nakari snorted. Relax, Luke. You're not the first man I've caught in the act, and this isn't the first time I've caught you, either. It's just the first time I let you know you're a little obvious. I winced. Is it possible to be a little obvious? No, I was trying to be nice. You were obvious. I was grateful that we dropped into the Nanthri system a moment later, because it drew our attention to something else. An alarm pinged in my brain. Danger. There. And without thinking, I banked the ship tightly to starboard and accelerated, even as a small fleet of ships appeared on our scanners that decidedly weren't Imperial. It wasn't the Alliance either. So why were there more than 20 ships flying below us to port in a loose formation? Most of them were small fighter craft, escorting a large cruiser capable of docking them all. Some of those fighters on the trailing edge of the formation were close enough to engage us if they wanted. And within seconds, they demonstrated that they wanted that very much. The others turned to pursue as well, but they would never have time to get involved unless I flew at them. My quick assessment was that I only had about 5 to worry about. But if I had waited those extra few seconds for them to appear on the screen, and then assessed the information before acting, I would have flown closer and drawn within range of a few additional ships. Throwing up the deflector shields, I accelerated even more to about 3/4 full, and their first shots never landed. But Nakari still saw the bolt zip past the cockpit and realized belatedly that we were under attack. Whoa, who's firing at us? Most likely pirates, I said. Right now they probably just think our ship is slick and carrying something valuable. When they find out we're traveling without any goods, though, they'll take the ship and sell us into slavery, or ransom us to my father. Or give us to the Empire if they find out about the bounty on our heads. I liked that thing you did a few seconds ago where you made the ship go faster, Nakari said. I think you should do it again. I'll consider it, but I think we're okay for a little while. Their cannon fire was coming faster and starting to concentrate, but still hadn't hit us. The Desert Jewel was a slim target, and I had run evasive patterns before. We did have room to push the engines, but I didn't want to pull away too quickly, because the pirates might decide to use missiles if they saw us widening the gap. Our deflector shield should be able to withstand some blaster fire, but might be overtaxed by missiles. R2, how long until you can take us to hyperspace?
45 seconds. Mark.
Okay. Take us as soon as you can. Don't wait for my order.
45 seconds is a long time when people are shooting at you,
Nakari pointed out, tension clear in her voice. I stole a quick glance at her and realized that she hadn't been in many firefights like this. Her comfort zone was an atmosphere, with a slug thrower cradled against her shoulder and a backup blaster. Piloting was something she did to get to the next planet. And her evident worry told me she'd flown in few, if any, combat situations. Her experience working for her father had taught her the shooting usually didn't start until she landed. Not that I wasn't a little concerned myself. 5 against 1 is a poor scenario, especially when the 5 have 15 more behind them. But the fact was we had a better ship, and the enemy didn't know it yet. I was willing to bet these sublight engines could match the speed of a TIE interceptor. The Jewel's sensors told me that the pirates firing on us flew cloak-shaped fighters and a couple of B-wings. And while they were no doubt customized to some extent, it was improbable that they could match the Desert Jewel once I went to full burn. But I didn't want to use that fuel if it wasn't necessary. We had a long trip ahead, and friendly ports would be scarce when we got into trouble. So if the shields and our Rodian upgrades could handle this, I would let them. I think we'll be okay, I said. And of course, as soon as the words left my mouth, we took our first hit on the bottom of the starboard wing. The shields prevented any damage, but the impact spun us around and changed our vector. I had to fight the ship back on course to present the smallest target.
That's not okay, Luke. What are you waiting for? Go faster.
The shields are still fine. Most of their shots are missing us. We got hit and spun again, and this time the shield energy readout dipped noticeably.
It's the ones that hit us I'm worried about, she exclaimed.
Every time I try to reassure you, we get nailed, so I'll just fly, okay? Before Nakari could retort, a growled message from one of the pirates fed through the comm system.
Unidentified ship. Surrender for inspection, and we guarantee your personal safety. Continue to flee, and you will be destroyed.
Nakari snarled and took out her frustration on the speaker. She jabbed the comm button and said,
Unidentified hole. Please shut it and inspect yourself. Continue to talk, and you will be ignored.
Her rebuke worked, in one sense. They didn't talk anymore. But all three of the cloak shapes decided to let heat-seeking missiles do their talking for them, a development for which I was prepared, but which still surprised me. A ship blown to fragments wouldn't yield them any profit. Maybe they'd had a rough day of piracy, or maybe they were trigger-happy. I didn't dwell on it, since surviving the six missiles was more important than discovering why they'd been fired. I'd hoped to avoid dealing with missiles altogether, but we'd had some flares installed on Rhodia that would be useful now. Phosphorus flares can burn much hotter than the engines for a brief time and draw the heat seekers away. But timing their release is crucial. Deploy them too early and you risk them dying out and allowing the heat seekers to reacquire the sublight engines. Deploy them too late and the explosion will damage your drives anyway. Thinking of that made me reevaluate the pirate strategy. They weren't trying to kill us. They were merely trying to damage our engines. They were gambling that we had flares, and hoped we would either deploy them poorly, or at the very least deplete the number of flares at our disposal. If they damaged us, their objective was achieved. If not, fire another volley and repeat until we were crippled. If they gambled poorly, and we were destroyed after all, they wouldn't lose any sleep over it, because they'd given us a chance to surrender. If Drusel were in the cockpit, she might be able to look at the vectors and speeds of the incoming missiles and calculate the optimal release time for the flares. But I had to rely on instinct. Or rather, instinct aided by the Force. We wouldn't be jumping to hyperspace before the missiles reached us. And trying to outrun them was the sort of idea that would have C-3PO pronouncing our doom. So it had to be the flares. When I closed my eyes and reached out to the Force, it was as if I had never left it a couple minutes ago. The awareness was still there, a rush of it filling my head like an additional sense that spoke to me of my surroundings, inside the ship and out. Nakari was worried and willing to let me know. Drusel was also worried, but keeping silent. R2 was simply there, and I assumed he was busy working with the nav computer on our jump. I felt the five closest pirates and the six missiles, adjusted the course of the Jewel in response to their positions and pattern of fire, and waited for the right moment to set off the flares. When it came, I opened my eyes to check that my finger really was hovering over the correct button on the newly installed Rhodian weapon system panel, a moment of self-doubt, I suppose, and pressed when my eyes confirmed it. The flares deployed and attracted the heat seekers. Explosions rocked the space behind us. Cannon fire continued to streak past, and the pirates launched another round of missiles.
Are we okay? Did you get them all?
Nakari asked. I got the first six, but six more are inbound.
Do we have enough flares for that?
I think we have enough, but we won't need them.
Why not?
I grinned at her. Because it's been 45 seconds now. The stars streaked past like raindrops on a window as R2 jumped on schedule. Nakari closed her eyes, clenched her fingers on the armrests of the co-pilot's seat, and took a deep breath. When she exhaled, she relaxed, tension draining out of her shoulders and fingers, and she opened her eyes and looked at me.
I'm sorry for yelling, Luke. You obviously knew what you were doing, and I wasn't helping.
Don't worry about it, I said. People tend to yell in combat. It's high stress. Was that your first time being chased like that? Nakari nodded, her lips pressed tightly together. If we'd been in the Harvester, you'd have had cause to be worried, I told her. But you made a good decision to spend all your credits on those engines. A fancy bunk room wouldn't have saved us.
Thanks.
She took another deep breath, and then made an effort to smile.
You know, we never did get to finish our earlier conversation.
Uh-oh. We didn't?
No. We were interrupted.
She unbuckled herself and moved close to me. Her right hand raised to my left cheek, and I flinched minutely, wondering if I had crossed a line with my staring earlier, and now I was going to pay for it. But something else happened. She rested her hand lightly there, and then she planted a soft kiss on my right cheek. She murmured in my ear,
I was going to say, I don't mind if you're obvious, but since I think you missed all my subtle hints, this is me being obvious.
Oh, was all I could manage to say, overwhelmed by surprise. Nakari didn't remove her hand from my face, but she reared back to look me in the eye, her expression incredulous.
That's all you have to say? Oh?
I made a completely unnecessary throat-clearing noise and said, I liked that thing you did a few seconds ago where you kissed me. I think you should do it again.